For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
The problem most men have is they don't know how to talk to women.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know what my problem is? I am not interesting.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
What am I supposed to say? I went to magic camp? I'm an accomplished ventriloquist?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh, I am a seventh degree imperial yo-yo master. Oh, do me, yo-yo master. I want you to do me because you're the yo-yo guy.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2 and YouTube. Good morning, YouTube. Hello. The Vancouver Ford text line, if you want to reach the show, hang out with us, is 503-864-6326. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at VancouverFord.com. And you can also give your thoughts on the YouTube chat, YouTube.com/1080TheFan. We are live there all week. All the shows, all the programs are live. A lot to get to here in the second hour of the show. Probably going to be pretty college football heavy.
Yeah, I would say so.
We'll get back into some NFL. There's some lingering NFL thoughts. My bet with Schultz's off to an awful start with the Pittsburgh Steelers being 1-0. Of course.
How many touchdowns did they score yesterday?
Yeah. they won a game with 6 field
and
goals.
They found a way to. That's Mike Tomlin, man. Yeah. That's what he does.
Yeah, that is what he does. Will we start the second hour? The Oregon Ducks. The old Peacock Network. Not a great display for them this weekend. Turns out when they don't have NFL or Olympics, they don't care as much or something. Because
dear God, that was bad.
That was really, really bad. Yeah. It wasn't broadcaster problem. It was quality.
I'm going to criticize the broadcasters a little bit, too.
Really? Michael Robinson and Andrew Siciliano.
Yeah, he was screwing up the score. He said at the end of the third quarter it was 27-0.
Can I defend him quickly to interrupt you?
Fire away.
I think those guys, what I've learned in watching their booth hits, I think they watch TV. I don't think they're actually watching the field and the Jumbotron. I think they're looking at their own TVs.
There's a lot of that for sure in broadcasting.
And I think that's what happened because their score bug got screwed up.
I mean, you should to say the score at one point is 27-0 when that's clearly not the case. I'm a little nitpicky here, but I think it was everything together. That was one of the worst Oregon broadcasts that I have ever seen.
And so many in the state of Oregon so far have not watched the Ducks play because Comcast didn't have the Big Ten Network, and some don't have the Peacock Network.
No.
But they escaped Boise 37-34. This was a wild, unpredictable ride through that whole journey. If you looked at box score stuff, I don't think it would accurately tell you what the game was. I think it was like it's like a musical fest. You had to be there, man.
You had to know.
Yeah, you had to be Woodstock. Yeah. You know, you can watch the documentary, but you had to be there. That's kind of what it felt like to watch or probably be at Autzen. JNT lived up to the billing, 192 yards on the ground.
God, he is so good, man.
Wow, he was an NFL guy.
He's an absolute monster.
He was really stinking good. Jordan James got the bulk of the carries. They changed that from week one. We talked about that, coincidentally, on Friday. I was like, Jordan James is the better back. He should be the premier back. Oregon, escaping Boise State. How are you doing on Monday?
Undefeated, buddy. 2-0, man. I don't have nothing to talk about here. 2-0. I think they're the first team in the history of college football that keeps winning and dropping in the polls, so I can't wait for that potentially to happen again this weekend. Eke out a win like by three against Oregon State, and they fall for like to number 12 or 13.
Somebody was demanding the dirty poll after Saturday night's game.
I'll tell you what, they're not going to be in the top 10, man. This is not a serious football team right now. There were a lot of things that you wanted to see cleaned up from week one to week two. And almost all of them were not cleaned up from week one to week two. The offensive line is still a glaring issue. That did not go away. And the other big thing from week one was the penalties and shooting yourself in the foot. And they said, you thought eight penalties was a lot. Hold my beer. Let's go for nine. And those are the only the accepted penalties.
Accepted ones, yeah.
And then added an extra turnover on top. They only had one turnover last week. They said, hey, one turnover. We'll go for two this week. And they had two turnovers this week, both of them in critical moments. I have never seen a stupider football game in my entire life. That game made no sense. Every time something good would happen for Oregon and you would have the thought of like, oh, maybe they're kind of finding a little bit of form here. Maybe this is the momentum turner they needed. They would follow it up by quite literally doing the stupidest thing humanly possible. They got off to a horrible start, three and out. You're down 3-0. Okay, you find yourself up 14-10. All of it, you're in the lead. First half, offense has a couple explosive plays. Here we go. 14-10. You force a 3-and-out from Boise State. You got the lead. All right, momentum on our side. 14-10. Oregon then had a 3-and-out in which they lost 24 yards and punted on 4th and 34. They had a 4th and 34 that they had to punt on. So, way to seize momentum there. You fast forward to the second half after a horrendous first half. You have dominated the second half defensively. Boise State came out to start the second half, six plays and punt, only gained 29 yards, 3-and-out, 3-and-out.
That third quarter was dominant.
That was
by
the
Oregon's
start
defense.
Of their second half. Yeah. Oregon's defense was controlling the game. You turned a 6-point deficit into a 7-point lead that should have been an 8-point lead, but you missed a PAT, but I digress. It's 27-20, fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ball on Boise State's 30-yard line going in to take a 2-score lead. What did Boise State largely struggle to do offensively in that game? Throw the football. You're going to turn them into a pass-happy offense. That leans right into the strength of your defense. JT's kind of out of the mix at that point because they're going to have to throw their way back into it. And instead of finishing that and going up by 10 or 14, you proceed to fumble, give up a touchdown on the next play, and then fumble two plays later, and then give up a touchdown four plays later.
Now
and you said,
down.
How about instead of going up 14, we're down by 7 with 8 minutes or whatever it was to go in the fourth quarter. That was one of the stupidest games I've ever seen. They tried actively to lose it and multiple times, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around how they did not lose that game.
Yeah. That's a very good
special
recap
teams.
By you.
Special teams is how they didn't lose it. I know the answer, but still, that's like, how is that possible?
Well, I've thought this for a while, and I thought it even more watching this game Saturday night. Oregon, no matter who is on the team, I'd go back to Chip Kelly probably for my brain. I would never kick to any player ever at the University of Oregon, and I just don't. And Boise was largely avoiding this, and then the one punt they gave Tez, what happened?
Yeah.
He gone. And then they kick it to Noah Whittington instead of kicking it in the back of the end zone. What happened? Touchdown. Like, without those, Boise wins.
Yep.
And I want to ask you this. We are in a hot take business, scorching hot take for some. Where are you at on Dan Lanning?
I haven't changed on Dan Lanning at all.
None of the start to this season has changed anything for you about Dan Lanning?
No, it hasn't, because I think you have to look at the bigger picture and not in the moment. And the bigger picture is he has elevated your recruiting profile and upped the level of talent on this roster, which I still believe that they have, an incredible amount of talent on this roster. And that's not going to change because of one bad week or two bad weeks or one bad loss or two bad losses, which might be looming in the near future for you. This team, I think it all boils down to a fundamental flaw that they have. And that fundamental flaw is their offensive line is incredibly banged up. And without certain guys in the lineup, they suck. Like, Charlie Pickard playing is a break glass in case of emergency situation, and you've had to start him at center in back-to-back games. His calls and checks are horrible. That keeps you from running the football efficiently. He's hiking the ball to Dylan Gabriel when he's not expecting it. That leads to a turnover and a fumble. Like, that is where the fundamental flaw of this team is. It starts up front, and if they don't fix that, this is going to be a bad football team this year. But I don't throw out what he's done for 2 years in the direction the program's going, because they have injuries there and they haven't been able to figure it out on the offensive line.
The only counter to what you said there, because you're not wrong, and we got offensive line reaction audio from Dan, who I text this to you guys. I watched his post game. I watched his on field post game. I think you could see it in the game. He has the look of a guy who is being caught off guard that his team is this.
Yeah.
Because he was doing a lot of chest puffing, kind of off-season stuff, building a lot of momentum for him in the program. And I hear what you're saying about the offense. It's also been Idaho, Boise State mm-hmm. that they're having problems with on the offensive line.
Yeah, not good.
So I don't know, and maybe they'll prove us wrong with Bedford's return. I don't know if excusing an injury or two on the offensive line. Boise State gave up a ton of points to Georgia Southern last week.
Mm-hmm.
Idaho is Idaho. This is a team that came in with preseason national championship kind of thought or opinion from some, if not Big Ten title worthy. And so far, it's been like squeak by Idaho and barely get past Boise State.
Hasn't looked good at all.
And so that's why I asked you, like, the Dan Lanning. Not that you.
Well, I think that's the question. Like, where am I at on Dan Lanning? You want me to fire him?
No.
What's the thought? Am I out on him as a coach?
Well, it's got to be just. I'm not expecting you to say you're firing Dan Lanning to be ridiculous. And I'm not even saying he is a bad coach. I'm just like, this season so far, and it's weird because you're right, they're 2-0, they're falling in the polls. But this has not been the team at all that we thought we would see.
No.
I think Dylan Gabriel's numbers are a lie. Numbers never lie, they say. I've watched it. It looks weird. It looks different with him.
He's holding on to the football. He's taking bad sacks. He's not reading the pressures the defenses
yes.
are bringing.
And that's the thing is, that's one difference between him and Bo. And Lanning actually said this in the postgame. I was a little surprised. He's like, hold on to the ball too long.
Well, yes.
That first sacks that they got.
First drive of the game, second play of the game. It was a cover zero blitz, all out blitz.
You can't block all the guys coming,
and he just stood there in the pocket and held it.
Here was Dan Lanning. He had a back and forth with the Oregonians reporter on the offensive line shuffling.
Even if you're sorting out some of the O-line rotation, Dan, as you mentioned, are four different lineups and 11 changes and 57 plays too much? Was that by design? And does this uncertainty give you pause or raise questions about in the offseason, about the spring, about mixing and matching personnel as much as you guys did?
Well, I think if you're mixing and matching today, that's probably a good reason to make sure you mix and match in the spring. But, I mean, how long did it take you to do all that math? Just keep tracking. Good. I'm glad you figured it out. We're going to figure out who the best is. Keep working it.
Like a 24-second question and a 7-second answer.
That's a lot of math, a lot of combination. I wasn't counting all of them, but every time there was a different O-line combination in, I was the Leo movie pointing at the screen. That's a new center, new guard.
Well, here he is. He had more on the O-line on the rotation of his offensive line.
We'll watch the film and see, right? Again, I always talk about if you're good enough, you're old enough. Ever since I've been here, we've rotated on the offensive line when we had players that were able to do that. You know, JPJ was rotating early on, you know, his first year. Last year we had, Poncho rotating in. So that's not uncommon for us to get, you know, the best guys in the lineup and keep guys fresh. So we'll watch the film, evaluate it, and figure out, you know, our best five or six or seven, whoever that might be, that can play winning football for us.
Will they get their best five? They have the Civil War this weekend at Oregon State. They beat Boise State this week in 37-34. Some more on the Ducks. How do you feel about the Oregon Ducks? What do they look like to you? You can chime in at the Vancouver 4 text line 503-864-6326, or you can pop off in the YouTube comments as well. More on Oregon's win over Boise next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Welcome back in. Civil War week, baby. Can you feel it?
We did not plan the music with that clip and the talking about this song, but it's fitting. It's fitting.
I think we. I don't know.
That was the
He's
universe.
In charge of the music. Yeah, don't look at me.
That was funny. The synergy of the universe right there. Stay alive, man. Stay alive.
Look, I was not expecting you to say, I'm firing Dan Lather 2-0. I'm just asking because this is a pivotal year. We talked about this in the offseason. The hype was there. They had built. He'd had a good start to his career at Oregon. They are recruiting very well. Mm-hmm. There were some things in that game that the decision to just punt.
Yeah, they had a surrender drive in that game. They ran it three straight times and punted from the 10-yard line.
I have not seen that in the landing era. That was the worst and weirdest possession he's had in his tenure at Oregon.
Will Stein has been horrible this year. I think that's safe to say. Now, he dialed up the nice one-play touchdown drive after Tez had the early punt return where they had Evan Stewart going across the middle. It was a max pro. That was a well-designed play. The first deep shot to Evan Stewart as well. It was nice to see him take some shots.
The hold-in one, to me, and I'm not an X's and O's football genius here, it looked like Dylan did pick up the blitz in that.
That was the same thing you saw early in the game.
Slant. Let's go.
Yeah. Like they're rushing everybody. Yes. It's one-on-one. Just get rid of the football.
Yes.
And you're going to score a touchdown. And that's what happened. He also had just horrific play calls. But again, the reason why I don't want to go too hard on him is that I think it comes back to the fundamental flaw, man. Like, if you don't have confidence in your offensive line, mm-hmm. you're not going to have confidence in play calls. They had a 3rd-and-2 late in that game when they're driving to kick the game-winning field goal. 3rd-and-2. You're playing Boise State. Hand the ball off and fall forward for 2 yards.
Yes.
Should happen.
Yes.
What did they have to do to get 2 yards? They felt like they had to put Terrence Ferguson in motion, line him up under center, have him move,
and then he
barely got the first down.
He did. It was like 1 yard.
Barely. Like they don't have the confidence that they can just hand it off and run it for 2 yards. And I think to your point on the Sorrento drive, that was the drive that people booed. You're on your own 10-yard line. I think they're terrified of giving up a sack in that moment and then having to punt from the 2. Like, they have zero confidence in that group. They called a hook and ladder behind the line of scrimmage. They're calling gimmicks. Like, they just, until they can get that figured out. And if they can't, this is a 4-loss team. Like, if you can't figure out things up front, your season's not going to end well. I don't know how the next 3 weeks go because none of these opponents are out of this world. You should be able to win even if you don't play at your best. But if you can't figure out your offensive line play, dude, Ohio State's going to come into Autzen and dog walk you.
Well, if
you're not going to go into Ann Arbor and score on them. You're not, like, it's going to be a rough year. And so if you're holding to any glimmer of hope, it is that when they had Charlie Pickard out of the game and they had Poncho in at center and Strother, who missed the first game, who was still coming off an injury, in at the other guard position, they were at least, I think they had 13 rushes for 77 yards. It wasn't quite as penalty ridden. And when you look at the lineup, when they had Pickard in at center, it was like 9 carries for 40 yards running the ball. Most of that was created by the backs breaking tackles, and they had bad snaps, holding calls, and sacks that were given up. So at least in that game, they were slightly different, but you can't figure that out, man. You're going to suck this year.
So I was texting with somebody about this, and I kept going through the schedule because I was curious around halftime. And based on what we had seen, I'm just like, okay, we'll see what they are at Oregon State. They're 9-3 because they have talent. They've got stars that matter a little more than most of their schedule.
Yes.
And that was the only reason I'd ask you that. It's just,
I mean, it's a disappointing year for sure.
9-3, 8-4 in your first 10 year in the Big Ten after all of the noise is it's somehow a good record, and yet that's not going to be good at all. At Oregon State, at UCLA, Michigan State. Those are your next three before Ohio State.
Yep.
And if you look similar to what you've looked like, if Bedford comes back and the offensive line is still having these kinds of struggles, you're 100%. Ohio State is going to dog walk you in your stadium.
You're not
going to
block that defensive
now,
line.
Now, Michigan, I watched Michigan, and I know Texas is a different level, but I still wouldn't. I just that's why I say like a 9-3, because I just think talent overall, the composite stuff, and I know Idaho, Boise State. But it looks like a team that might eke their way to a 9-3 season if this is the team. And we're 2 weeks in, and we said last week, all right, here's your chance. We're taking you with all these points,
mm-hmm.
and you barely beat Boise State. And so I'm not sitting here acting like Oregon is still Oregon. I have definitely changed how I view them after their first 2 weeks and big game this weekend, rivalry weekend down in Corvallis. It's just shocking to me. I just, even with an injury or two, I did not expect that offensive line group to be as bad as they are And I think that's part of the depth conversation of, man, I just to not be able to be okay against those two opponents is shocking. It's just jaw-dropping shocking to watch the way they've played.
I think it highlights, and I like when you ask a question about Lanning, like it's okay to be critical of decisions or, you know, thought process or strategies that he has. It doesn't mean you want to fire him. His biggest weakness early in his tenure at head coach has been finding, developing, and evaluating the offensive line.
Is that in a is it Leak Terry?
Leak Terry's your offensive line coach? He hired originally Adrian Clem in year one. Clem landed Connerly at left tackle, and then he bolted right away for an NFL job. I think he went to Pittsburgh or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he was gone, and you brought in a Leak Terry. They have not recruited at a very high level on the offensive line, and clearly this is an issue. Like I think that's the alarming thing. Like I can sit here and think to myself, if you get a little bit healthier up front, if you find a way to just be serviceable and not be horrible, I think your defense is pretty good. You got great skill position players. Like, your schedule's not that hard, man.
Yeah.
Like, the next three games, you don't have to be perfect to win. Did we see UCLA what they did in week one?
Yeah, they eked out against Hawaii.
Eked out a win against Hawaii. Yeah. Michigan State, Aiden Childs threw three picks this week. Should have thrown four.
He's got five picks on the year.
Like, I'm not terrified of playing them at home.
Sure.
I'm not. It's not a guaranteed win. You damn near lost to Boise. But
Michigan State is
You're not playing a world beater the next 3 weeks.
Boise might be better than Michigan State and UCLA.
Ashton Gentry's better than anybody you're playing in the next 3 weeks. That I know for certain. And so...
Well, have you seen Jam?
Jam's a good back. He ain't no Ashton Gentry. So that's where, like, you have 3 weeks to try and you can keep winning and try and figure this out.
Yeah.
But I think the fear factor, though, is that even if you get Bedford back this week, and let's say the offensive line stays healthy, you're one injury then away from being right back into this spot. And injuries happen, and it's a long season, and so that might happen in the back end of the year. They came into the season hoping they didn't have to play Charlie Pickard, but then Dave Lulley got hurt, Nishan Strother got hurt, and Matthew Bedford got hurt, and they didn't really have another choice because they don't have depth up front, and that's something that he desperately needs to address, not only the rest of this year in the recruiting, but next year in the portal. Like, that has to be priority number one.
Somebody saying 8-4 would be an eye raise to Lanning, and I think that's kind of my point. It doesn't have to be the hottest of takes. You're not firing Dan Lanning, but 8-4 year one in the Big Ten with the floating duck in the river going into the year, that's a big, like, whoa, okay. Somebody else saying go get new offensive line talent evaluator. I think that's a fair thing. Somebody saying, I'm trying to read these as they come in because a lot of really good thoughts are being shared. Dirt, I don't think Stein has any clue what he has and what works due to the line shuffling.
Yeah.
No one has any confidence in anything right now.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Even
Gabriel. I think Gabriel is questioning and not confident in the pocket because they're just not on the same page communicating.
I think that was kind of the one thing that maybe we didn't give enough credence to was, like, with some of the hype or the noise about Oregon, was we knew Gabriel was good, but we also knew Bo was all-time kind of special for them. It just Oregon's quarterback history, what he was doing statistically, was all-time special. And even if that drop-off isn't a big, big gap, that drop-off still may have mattered. And so it's only 2 weeks, but he's had some plays where I'm like, what are you doing? But he's also had some throws where I'm like, damn, that was a dime. And that was kind of what it looked like on Saturday against Boise State. And I probably some of that is definitely on the trust or no trust of offensive line stuff. But also, he's a smaller quarterback. And so it's like, I don't know if he just have trouble identifying blitz pickups. When Boise was showing they were blitzing, it felt like he did better. When they disguised it, it kind of felt like he didn't see it coming. And, oh, my God, there you go. There's a sack or he's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They just generally, it's like most of this is offensive line issues, but you're seeing it kind of circumvent the entire impact of the offense and maybe even to the OC himself.
Without a doubt. And I think after you see it for 2 weeks, my expectations have completely changed on this team. From thinking they're one of the best in the country to survive and advance every week. There's find a way to win. Like, until you show me you're a different team, I'm not going to believe that you are a different team. And then I also, the other part of my brain goes back to the fact that despite how bad they played, they're up 27-20 on the Boise State 30-yard line driving to take a two-score lead. And you proceed to fumble on two of your next three plays and hand immediate touchdowns. And your defense had dominated the entire second half and then had to go out in a sudden change. All right, there's a fumble. We're driving to go up two scores. Wait, what happened? Okay, we're back in the game. And then I take the wrong gap on Ashton Gentry, and he's the best running back in the country, and he goes 70 yards.
God, he was untouched on that play.
Untouched for like 80 for a 70-yard touchdown run. Nope, like the linebacker and the safety took the wrong route. They thought he was bouncing outside. He cut it inside. A wall was built, and he goes for a long touchdown. It just... you played horrible, and you were that close to going up 14 points in the fourth quarter at home against Boise. And if they do, are we singing a slightly different tune today? So that's the only silver lining that I'm hoping for. But if you don't figure out your offensive line and get healthy up front, and Charlie Pickard never plays another snap, hopefully, you're in for a rude awakening in the weeks to come.
Boys, the difference between Pickard at center and Poncho was glaring through my TV. Connerly, Strother, Poncho, Harper, Cornelius on the line. James had huge holes. Gabriel calmed down, had time to throw, and the offense looked fine. Are we sure he's going to be concrete this weekend in Corvallis with his line? Bedford, this was kind of the game people circled with Bedford, wasn't it?
It was close to, he's practicing right now. He's not going 100%. There was hope that last Thursday he would go 100%, but that they were hopeful he was going to play. Lanning said last Monday night he was hopeful he would make his debut, and that did not happen.
Somebody says, if you remove all of the bad things Oregon did, then they would have won, end quote, is a great coping mechanism, Beavs by 50.
I mean, they did win the game, though. I'd like to point that out. They did win the game.
Yeah, but Beavs by 50.
You're feeling good, man.
Wow, I might have to ask that Lanning question on Monday if it's Beavs by 50.
If Beavs win by 50, you go ahead and ask if we should fire Dan Lanning.
All right. I'll read one more thought and then we'll go. We'll get into Oregon State. We'll get back into Oregon or we can carry it over. I don't care. I'm in on everything today. Mondays are always a weird one with the NFL and college football slate. Trying to remain positive. I'm thinking maybe this game was this year's Wazoo game from 2 years ago or last year's Tech game. Barely get a win that you have to come back to get against a team. Yeah, you should win comfortably. Yeah. Or maybe we are this year's UW. We barely win games all year long, but still win them. And I saw that, the UW thing, and I think that was the interesting takeaway. It feels a little different. I know the UW team escaped some games for sure.
A lot of them, yeah.
But they had different ish. I know it's hard to comp, but it just feels a little different than even that UW
team. Well, the
team,
reason that feels different was because before UW started eking out wins, they had a marquee win under their belt. Their eking out of wins didn't start until after they beat Oregon. And then they barely beat ASU, Stanford, Utah, USC, Oregon State, Washington State. Like the rest of their schedule, they barely won. But they had that one win to show you. And you can label the Texas Tech game last year if you want. That's fine. They did barely win that game as well and then kind of found the rhythm as the season went on. The difference is you were coming off a bad performance. Last year for that game, you were coming off an 80-point win against Portland State. Yes, it's Portland State, but there was no question coming out of week one. This year, there was question coming out of week one, and you did, outside of creating explosive plays, they didn't fix any of the issues they had last week.
A little more on this, and then we'll get into the Beavs. They win in San Diego. Dirt and Sprague back with more.
Well, we got done getting through my team. Everybody's feeling great.
Did we, though?
2-0, man. 2-0. Get you two of these, buddy. Undefeated.
Somebody did say it's the weirdest 2-0 I've ever had.
I mean, that is the irony of all of it, the way we're talking about it, is it feels like they're 0-2.
Yeah.
It feels like they're 0-2, but they're not 0-2. They're 2-0. And they might be 2-1 at the end of the week. They might be 3-0, but they could win another uncomfortable game. I think I've come to the conclusion that every week is going to be a white knuckle ride and nothing is comfortable anymore. And that's, that's the beauty of college football. I'm okay with that, but it's going to be a bumpy roller coaster ride all year.
I also love that this week, I've also been up and down because it's Oregon State. And we had a friend of ours reach out and say, hey, are you going to be there? I'm looking for a tailgate. I said, no, F this game. I was really frustrated because I just think it's so stupid that we're here and it's happening week three. I love that Oregon's weird start and then Oregon State is 2-0. And this is what's great is you give takes at different points of the season or off season and people hold it. One of our P1's, Tyler, pulled something from July 16th and clipped it out and said, we had to hear all summer from Dirt, quote, you're not beating UO this year, just an FYI. It's not happening, with the audio clip attached to it.
Let's go.
And so basically saying, you get no leeway on the point spread.
Okay.
I'm getting all 14.5 points.
I mean, I'm okay with 14.5. I'll take 14.5.
I thought it'd actually be a little higher, to be honest. But
I think most of the offseason, the line was 20.5, 21.5.
Around there, yeah.
I just have a forewarning, too, on the polling of clips. Like, first off, kudos to you for saving that and remembering
that. Hey, you know what? When someone says something about your team,
Let's go ahead and wait till next Monday, though, to pull that off of a win.
Well, their point was, I'm not giving up any points.
Okay.
That's all the point
okay,
was.
Because let's get to your team. They go down to San Diego this weekend.
Yes.
And that was a horrible football game.
It was.
Bad football. Yeah. 7-0. They add two touchdowns on late, and Oregon State wins 21-0 the final. San Diego State, some of the numbers behind it. They had a total of 7 first downs. They were 2 of 12 on third down. They had 179 total yards of offense. had the only turnover of the game. They were out possessed with the football. Oregon State about 41 to 19 minutes was the difference there. Eight penalties for 80 yards, and that just, it was horrible to watch. And Oregon State pulls away late. How do we feel about the Beavs 2-0 start? And kind of an uncomfortable game that felt like it was going to be a blowout in the first quarter, and you look up, you're like, how is this only 7-0? And then the final score, lipstick on a pig, 21-0.
Well, I think the final and the stats line up with my Friday feeling, but the game itself in real time kind of did and didn't. Defensively, I wasn't shocked. In fact, I probably gave San Diego State too much credit to score with Marquez Cooper. I didn't think Danny O'Neill would do anything on them.
And he did nothing on them.
And Cooper was fine, but like it was a one-man wrecking crew, and that was kind of it. Oregon State was able to slow that down. It was offensively, I thought they, after the, especially after that first drive, how easily they scored, they just could not put together anything. They had key drops, bad passes, just couldn't pick up first downs, giving it back. And I just was sitting there like, they should be winning this game 21-0 in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And you play around with 7-0 long enough, you can get burned. And they almost did.
Yeah.
But their quarterback, because San Diego State, for some reason, they didn't give it to Cooper. He kept it, and he fumbled.
On the 2-yard line going in.
And that changed the tide of everything. Oregon State finally put together some scoring drives. I don't know, man. Defensively, I'm happy. They've got a stud backer in Isaiah Chisholm. He's a true freshman. He's probably their best player already.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Collins is really good. Taylor's really good. They've got experience mixed with some young optimism, but offensively, it just, yeah, it was a little too wonky for my liking. They should have blown out further than 21-0, but defensively, I'm really happy with what they were. Offensively, that's what leaves me worried about the weekend. Going into the Oregon game, McCoy. Because if Oregon's defensive line and linebackers step up and slow the rundown, you're going to need McCoy to beat you. And I don't know if I feel very confident about that passing attack with McCoy and what they've shown us so far.
Yeah. Swag, how you feeling after that one?
Well, similar to what the Ducks were doing with some things, it's like, okay, you don't fumble it in the red zone. If Walker makes the catch on the flea flicker.
The flea flicker. He's wide open. Catch the football.
McCoy now, gives him a perfect
now
ball.
Now we're talking 35-0, and everybody's like, look out. So 1-2-3 plays. To what Sprague is saying, the Beavers, if they, the formula for the upset of the Ducks, that time of possession has to be similar. And then you have to eliminate some penalties and the turnovers in order for this to go down to the wire.
They need to, like, let's just be honest about this on a Monday. They have to run the ball.
They have to run the ball.
I don't know how you're going to.
The last time.
And they got three running backs. Let's not forget about the redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Who can come in. So they can keep backs fresh. My thing is.
Allah, right?
Yeah. I don't know about this third series or whatever it is, bringing in the redshirt freshman quarterback.
Not a fan of that, huh?
Because I think for McCoy, you need to develop rhythm. Him and Gunderson and getting, there's just a lot of newness, as we've seen with a lot of teams.
Yeah.
So they're still figuring it out to a certain extent. So let's get reps and all the different situations that come and find things that we are confident in. And when it is 3rd and 3 and the Ducks load the box and say, we're not letting GM Griffin run.
Right.
What play do I have on a quick pass or something? You know, they didn't hit the tight end. If they had a tight end,
let's
go.
About an hour and a half before they actually had the touchdown to
and
Caulfield.
And then they get Caulfield. And that play for Gunn, I think that was big because everybody in the world said on 3rd and 3 or whatever, they're just going to run it late in the game. And the fact that Gunderson called that play at that time, they had the game in hand, but that was the knockout punch. I think we saw a little bit of the personality of Gunderson, and I would like to see a little bit more of that in the Ducks game where situations allow.
I like what I've seen just from a play. Like Idaho State, he didn't need to open it up as much. I liked what I saw against San Diego State. It's just the execution of things. And like, it is little things that are important to note. A dropped flea flicker that's an obvious touchdown if Walker catches the football.
Because Walker caught everything else.
That was what was puzzling.
Right back to him right after that. He had a big game for him. Yeah,
he was their best target. They also had Everett Hayes miss a field goal that seemed like, oh, okay, they'll be up 10-0 at the half. And
miss a field goal.
The only thing that made me feel good about that was watching Sappington miss an extra point. And I'm like, yes, all right.
Dude,
all right,
that guy's a plant. I am now, if he's a plant, who sent him there? I want to know.
I need a
CIA invest. Where's the Department of Justice on this? I need an investigation.
Merrick Garland's got some things he's dealing with.
Not more important than this.
He's busy right now.
Not more important than this.
But you know who else is a plant down in Eugene helping the assistant offensive line coach?
Exactly.
Mike Kavanaugh.
You guys got plants in our locker room. Get him the hell out of there, man. You got moles. Get your moles out of my locker room, damn it.
No, I think it's exactly right to say I didn't question them winning it because what they were doing defensively.
You just never had any hope that San Diego State was going to be able to mount more than one. They had the one drive, and outside of that, they did nothing offensively. No.
But 7-0 is
7-0.
One bad bounce, and you're screwed.
That was my point last week. Idaho, we almost lost.
You snap a punt.
Yeah.
Over the kick, you know.
Bad bounce, bad fumble, a deflected ball up in the air.
Nonsense thing, and now you're,
Wait, how is this game tied? How did that happen? Yeah, exactly.
I think it's really encouraging because I had questions, and it's only San Diego State and Idaho State, so I'm not trying to get ahead of myself here, but I did have questions. It's not that I didn't trust Keith Hayward or Trent Bray, but like Bray going from the defense to the full coach job, kind of the scope of things changes for you. And so far, he's probably feeling good about how things have gone. I did have questions defensively, and so far, now this weekend will be a much tougher task. They've passed the sniff test, and when I look at the schedule, like UNLV had a really blowout victory this week, and maybe they're going to be pretty good.
UNLV looks good.
They do. They look good.
Yeah.
But I look at their schedule past Oregon, and I'm even throwing Purdue in this. I'm like, why can't they be 9-3, 10-2 this year? Right, they defensively, they've got the makings of things. Now, again, this weekend will be different on a much grander scale than San Diego State and what they'll be and what Idaho State is, for sure. It's just the offense, McCoy, development. I'm okay with Johnson having a possession. I hear what you're saying.
Not so early in the game.
But I think that's part of what we saw last year, and maybe Bray kind of liked that part of doing the Aiden Childs thing randomly in lieu of DJ, and they're trying to develop. But just building more rapport and chemistry, maybe getting McCoy's confidence up because the run game's fine. It's the passing attack. And right now, this weekend was a little better than last. It still feels very lacking.
He seems like he's just uncomfortable when he's throwing the football. Like, that's the way I would describe it. Like, just his motion. He just seems like it's kind of forced, and doesn't mean he throws a terrible ball.
I think he's an athlete who ran a lot in high school and a lot at Idaho, and then like he threw okay at Idaho, but I think there's a little bit to that.
How you feeling, Beaver fan? 503-864-6326. That is the Vancouver Ford text line. One Beaver fan said college football now feels like college basketball to start of the one-and-done era. New teams each season, 50% new faces due to the portal.
There's a lot of
sloppy play is the outcome. And I think you've seen that all over the country. We'll get to that in a whole coming up at the top of the hour, because that was kind of the theme of the weekend of elite teams not looking very elite in week two.
And sometimes transfer guys not as good as you think they're going to be when they come into your program. See Notre Dame. Riley Leonard hasn't thrown a touchdown pass.
He was terrible this weekend.
I would bench him.
He was horrible, man.
It was funny watching the Irish Peacock show be teased after they had lost. He's in, and he's like, you come to Notre Dame because you want to win a national championship. Lou Holtz is like, this is what we do at Notre Dame. And I'm just like, ooh.
You lost to?
Lost to Northern Illinois.
Northern Illinois. We'll read some of your thoughts. Also, it is Civil War week?
God.
What?
This pisses me off, actually.
And Cougars are boycotting. We'll get to that next on The Fam.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online, crunch.com. I'm going to get to the college football slate coming up top of the hour. Some near misses and an actual major upset happened in the sport this weekend. We'll get to all that, including some fun with audio. And a couple of ass kickings happened in high-profile games. So all of that is still to come. One listener said maybe both teams were looking ahead to the Civil War this last week on the Ducks and the Beavers. One Beaver fan is not thrilled with what he's seen. They panicked and took McCoy instead of going all in on a power four quarterback. The offense looks awful. It's almost like he's not an FBS quarterback.
Yeah, this weekend is going to be, I think, very telling. It's not that Oregon wins or Oregon may cover that spread of over two touchdowns. It's how it looks. And I'm fascinated to see how he looks against a team of Oregon caliber. Despite all the things we've talked about with Oregon, they are 2-0.
There's a lot of talent on that roster. They can't put it together, but there's a lot of talent on that roster.
Right now, I hate to say this because I'll feel like I'm betraying. I think Boise State's better than Oregon State. And so Boise State's a formidable opponent. I'll be curious to see. I don't know what power four quarterback you wanted.
I think it would be a Jabari Johnson. He was a Missouri kid, so he's playing at a power four school.
So you just want to start the young guy and say, let's see where we go. Okay,
yeah. All right. And I see that argument.
He's largely a runner, though. He's not passing the ball either.
No, he has been effective in their two. I mean, he had a nice long run in the game on Saturday night, and he had a nice run as well in the game before that against Idaho State. So he's had his moments running the football. It is going to be a really weird week. Now, at least what we can say in the state of Oregon is that the atmosphere will be very good at Reser. This is their hottest ticket of the season. I think it's been sold out for weeks. Standing room only tickets are going. It's the most expensive ticket all year, and that's not a surprise because the game's in Corvallis. That's a bit of a different case in Apple Cup Civil War week because up in Seattle, they're having a really hard time pushing these tickets to Cougar fans who were essentially boycotting. So if you remember, they agreed before the Civil War did to continue the rivalry series. It was supposed to be in Pullman this year. But for whatever reason, the now athletic director at Washington, then at the time Washington State, elected to let this game be played at a neutral, air quotes, neutral site in Seattle, which, yes, I know there's a lot of Cougar fans there, but it's in the Huskies' backyard, not being played in Pullman. Washington sold out their allotment pretty quickly. It's, again, right there for them. And Cougar fans are not. It's basically going to be a half-empty Lumen Field. At least this was the indicator on Friday. They're boycotting and not wanting to buy tickets to go to this game.
Let's see closer to game time. I could imagine some secondary tickets, people desperate to just offload tickets, and that thing fills up a little more. That was a Friday report, I think, from one of the Coug-related websites. But the initial reports of them basically not buying tickets, this is a weird spot to be in because it's like, hell yeah, boycott that. Screw it being in Seattle. It should be in Pullman. You want to continue these games? Do what Oregon's doing. Go to Oregon State.
It should have been in Pullman this year.
However,
the Huskies are only 4-point favorites.
Cougars might be a better team right now. By not going to that game, if those ticket sales don't pick up much more, they might cost their athletic department like $3 million, yep, and they needs the money.
They
so
desperately need the
it's,
money.
It's a weird spot to be in because I totally get the boycott and saying, screw this. Why is it a neutral site game? And then what? We got to go to Seattle next year probably, or we got to go to Montlake. But also, you need the money. So yeah. I still think you'll get more Cougar fans that'll wait, buy at the last minute, and you'll have more fans at that game than you think. But yeah, this is stupid. It should be in Pullman.
Yeah.
All of this is stupid. I will die on that hill. Washington State, Oregon State are power four worthy teams. They got absolutely screwed. And I got kind of upset talking to a Duck fan that's going to his first Oregon State game at Reser.
This weekend, he's going to the Civil War.
He's going to the Civil War. He got a ticket. And I said, you know, I think most people would just hit you with some FTDs or go Beavs. And
I've never had any problems at Reser.
But don't be overly in their face because you might get some drunk encounters where this is not the year to be that person.
Yeah.
But I said, screw this. And I've changed my tune. I'm excited. Oregon struggled. Oregon State's 2-0. It still sucks. It's stupid and it's weird, and I don't blame any fan of any team involved in these new rivalry weeks that we have of not being as hyped about it.
I think your point on Wazoo is valid. It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. There's a part of me that admires them flipping the bird to their university, negotiating such a bad deal. Now, the game is back in Pullman next year. Why was there a...
Oh, are they going back to Pullman?
So next year will be in Pullman. Why is there a one... Why? Why are we playing this at Lumen Field?
They've done this in the past, and I always thought it was weird.
I just don't get it. It incredibly favors the Huskies and not having it on campus. It just... I don't understand that at all. But
it's a money grab, right?
To your financial point, it's a big deal if you don't end up going. So yeah. I think that will change a little bit. I think part of the reason it will change is because of what we saw this weekend. Now, Washington pulls away from Eastern Michigan, but that was a 7-6 game with 3 minutes to go in the first half. And what did the Cougs do this weekend?
Blew out
they
Texas
took
Tech.
A power 14 back behind the woodshed Never and dominated them. And so now you look at these rivalry games this week and you're like, hey, we got a shot at it, maybe pulling it off, and you want to be there to see them potentially win that first rivalry game after the conference separation. It's dumb, it's stupid, it's weird, and I've enjoyed all the posts in the last 2 weeks of what the combined old Pac-12, I think it's like 21-2 now.
21-2 the Pac-12.
21-2, including what, 3-0 or 4-0 against the SEC at this point in the season?
Yeah.
Man, with nice wins, Cal got a win on the road, USC beat LSU, would have looked good, man.
Much like the Cowboys at the Cleveland Browns, is the wrong team favored in the Apple Cup?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I will be gambling.
John Madeira.
I will be gambling on the Cougs.
+4?
I will be taking those points. You give me those points, I'm going to take those points.
Madeira is fun.
Let's get to the rest of the slate in college football. It was a wild weekend. What the hell is going on in Notre Dame? We got one guy who likes to give us crap about Notre Dame on social media. Is he going to show up today? Alabama ekes out a win over South Florida. Penn State barely beats Bowling. Like, what is happening in college football? And Tennessee and Nebraska roll. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.